From the deepest ocean to the jagged peaks of the world's highest mountains, get ready for an adventure into the wonder and excitement that is our planet. This week, we meet the man who invented the helicopter more than 500 years ago. Then we go up in a blimp, and there's not a football stadium in sight. And finally, photographers who are changing the world one shot at a time. From the Salem Radio Network, this is National Geographic Weekend. Back here on National Geographic Weekend, I'm Boyd Madsen. Have you ever played this little parlor game where people say, if you could pick five people from history, living or dead, that you would like to sit down and have dinner with and talk with, who would be on your list? Well, every time I've asked this, now it's come up so often that I've pretty well got my five in mind, although a couple of them change from time to time, but one that is always on that list, Leonardo da Vinci. I just think if there's one person that you want to know about, this person who is famous to most people for his artwork, the painting of the Mona Lisa and the Last Supper, two of the most famous paintings in the world, but yet that was only a minor part of his life. National Geographic has a new book out, Leonardo's Universe, the Renaissance World of Leonardo da Vinci. One of the authors of this book, Bulent Atalay, joins us now. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
And apparently you've been equally fascinated by Leonardo da Vinci because this is not your first book about his life.
No, I did one for the Smithsonian called Math and the Mona Lisa. And to everybody's surprise, my family's and my surprise included, it's in 12 languages after 4 years. So Leonardo does well.
There are a lot of people that want to have that mythical dinner with Leonardo da Vinci.
And he was on my list. My other two are Beethoven and Newton, and I'm writing a new book on the three of them.
What if they had a dinner together? That would be interesting. Leonardo da Vinci, as I say, we think of his artwork, and he was an extraordinary painter. But that was, what, the least of his accomplishments?
He was a part-time painter. At best, he was a part-time painter. We're certain of six paintings, 100% by him, maybe a 12 fairly certain, and then maybe 17 with some veracity. But the number one and the number two most famous paintings in the world are by him.
Why was he not a full-time painter when he was so good at it? Why was this not what he did that earned him a living?
Art historians sometimes say it was too easy for him. I'm not sure that's the case. I think he had to think it out. And what he thought out, he saw for all other artists. And yet he said, look at nature, learn from nature, not from each other. But we all have to learn from him to look at nature.
He did a certain number of paintings, it's fewer than 50,
sure.
But he also had a lot of sketches.
He probably had about 20,000 pages of notes, of course, full of sketches.
But he illustrated his studies or his work or the science or math
right.
He was doing or engineering. But in the course of that, what really stand out are his sketches of human anatomy. He was as good as it gets.
That's right. He's called the greatest anatomist in history by Sherwin Nuland, a very famous surgeon at Yale University and a good author on Leonardo. And, of course, this was an uneducated man who was inventing entire fields. He was inventing physics and biology and anatomy and geology.
And uneducated by classical training.
Not at all. No education whatsoever. He was born out of wedlock. He lived with his mother the first 5 years of his life. Then his father took him and for the next 10 years lived in Vinci with his father. After that, they immigrated and they went to Florence, where he was apprenticed to Verrocchio, a very fine artist at the time, who, like Leonardo, was illegitimate, and he told the students to build the body from the inside out. But he had no idea what levels Leonardo would go to learn the body from the inside out.
We're talking with Bulent Atalay, of which he is the co-author, Leonardo's Universe, about Leonardo da Vinci. And this is the point I wanted to get to, or one of the points about his anatomy drawings, is that you see the muscle structure of the physique, and the only way to know that is to peel back the skin. And you see inner workings of the human body. So he did autopsies, I guess.
He did. He did postmortems. In fact, there's a very nice story of, now, we can't be exactly certain because he liked myth himself, mythology, and he nurtured it. But there's one story of him going to a hospital and meeting an old man. And he asked the old man, he says, "How old are you?" The man says, "I don't know, but I'm very old." And Leonardo says, "What is very old?" The man says, "Well, I don't know, but my grandson is 58. Suddenly, the man with a smile dies. Leonardo, the most relentlessly curious man in history, has to know how anyone can die such a happy death. So he writes, "I did an anatomy of him." And then a few weeks later, he does an anatomy of a child, and he describes the difference. He says, in the case of the old man, the blood vessels leading to the heart were clogged, they were clogged and brittle. In the case of the child, they were clear and supple. He's describing atherosclerosis, hardening of the arteries, 400 years before the professors of medicine at the University of Vienna rediscovered it. But you see this all the time. He was inventing the future, but he wasn't influencing the future because he wasn't publishing. All his incredible discoveries were prefiguring Galileo and Isaac Newton. He discovered the law of free fall, which we give Galileo credit for. 120 years before Galileo, he had discovered the law of free fall, that everything accelerates at the same speed when there's no drag, air drag.
And he was doing this, or he was writing his observations down in journals with these illustrations, and that's how we know we found the journals, but they weren't being published. The scientific world wasn't looking at the latest writings from Da Vinci and saying, all right, now let's debate this or analyze it and pursue it. It had to be rediscovered then.
It had to be rediscovered. In the 19th century, most of these came to light, and he was writing backwards. We know that Leonardo was left-handed, but we also know that since he didn't have a poor first-grade teacher, he was never forced to write with his right hand.
So most kids were in those days. They were forced to change because you were considered possessed by evil spirits or something if you were left-handed.
To our parents' and grandparents' generation, they were forced to write with their right hands. Left was considered sinister.
He developed this style of writing, we call it mirror style writing,
yes.
Essentially writing backwards because he didn't want to drag his hand. Being left-handed, if he'd written the normal direction across a page from left to right, his hand would have gone across the freshly applied ink and smudged it.
Also, the point of the quill would get stuck. It's much easier to pull a pen than to push a pen. See, that's the reason he was doing it.
He did everything different.
He did.
Well, you yourself have a little of this Renaissance man characteristic because you were a professor of physics, but also an artist.
That's right. I realized a long time ago that I was doing the same thing, but he did it better than anyone else. Also, I had an education. I had a doctorate in physics. He had none whatsoever. He was inventing entire fields.
Does math and art in any way connect, or is this like merging the left and right sides of the brain?
In a way, it does. Although you do mathematics on the left side, right above the ear, in the inferior parietal lobe, and you do art on the right side. Leonardo obviously used both sides very effectively.
Leonardo da Vinci was certainly wired differently than the people of his time and maybe all time. Would you rate him on this scale of genius as
the greatest? He's a handful of transformative geniuses. We all know normal, intelligent geniuses. I've known maybe 20 Nobel Prize winners in physics, and most of them are extremely gifted. But they all stand in awe of a Leonardo. You don't ask who's the greatest artist. You start ranking at number three. Number one and number two are assigned to Leonardo and Michelangelo, and you can vary that. Every Monday, Wednesday, Friday can be Leonardo and Michelangelo on the other three days. In literature, it would have to be Shakespeare. In science, it's Isaac Newton, even above Einstein. See, these are the transformative geniuses. they are wired differently. There's no explanation for where their intelligence comes from. With others, with ordinary geniuses, you can say smart parents have smart children, there are more books in the house, better conversation, they're sportive parents. And it's almost always the case. But with these very rare breed, there's no explanation.
In case you're not familiar with some of the areas, and who could be familiar with all of them that Leonardo delved into, let's talk about some of the places where he led the way in design and thought and development. But we're going to take a short break. You might be interested to know that this pacifist was a military engineer and had drawings for weaponry. We'll look deeper into the life of Leonardo da Vinci when we return here on National Geographic Weekend. I'm Boyd Matson.